being here. I hope that last week, Carrie and I were not here, and that is an important thing of what you all allow us to do. There was a really precious couple that they couldn't find a pastor to marry them. Wonderful Christian folks, and she had been married before, has got two precious little kids, and this guy I had known 20 years ago says, "Hey, I know Nathan's a pastor now. I bet he would marry us because we haven't been able to find somebody that does second marriages." And I thought, this is just so crazy. What do they expect these people to do? It was just so precious. And the guy, Justin, during the marriage ceremony, the kids love them, and he loves them, and their dad is a complete deadbeat. And he got down on his knees and held their little hand and said, "I love you, and I will always love you, and I'll always be on your side. So sweet and so precious." And I got the privilege of getting to be there with those people because of you guys. You know, that's part of you getting to be your pastor means I get to do things for other people too sometimes. So thank you for that and for holding it together while I was gone. You know, good stuff. So since Easter, we've been doing some pretty practical Christianity stuff about what it is to live the Christian life, what it means to do what. What do we do after the cross and the resurrection, that place in history and that place in our life? What does it mean to live the way of Jesus, the Christian life? And hopefully you've been getting some real practical things. And we, most humans, we develop good intentions and then we just stop there. You know, but sometimes we just have to build up our pile of good intentions pretty deep and then it kind of flows over into action sometimes, you know. Spills over into that. So even if nothing has spilled over into action yet, hopefully we've like stacked up some good intentions, you know, and that reservoir of good intentions is getting higher and higher and higher related to praying and serving each other and looking out for each other and shining and all the things that we've been talking about and living a life of trusting and relying on God. But even better, just led to any sort of life changes in prayer. And today, we're going to talk about this pretty fundamental thing of singing. And you might think, well, I'm not much of a singer, and that's okay. I'm not either. But singing has always been a distinctive thing of the Christian life and of Christians. It's unique in its role in Christianity and choirs and of singing together and singing praises together. Than any other religion in the world. The only group of people that come anywhere near close to that are Jewish people, and that makes sense, right? Because that's where, because Jesus was Jewish, and we kind of come pretty related in that. But Christians have always been a singing people, and just like in the letter to Colossians that Paul was writing, this early church that is basically saying, in all that you do, be singing and praying and giving praising God and giving thanks to God and rejoice and letting that teach you and shape your soul and shape your life, this way of singing singing praises and celebrating God and singing to God. It has always been a part of the Christian life to sing, especially to sing at the mountaintop experiences of life, and also to sing in the dark, dark valleys of life. There's a lady that I used to hear say this pretty often. She said, faith is a bird that feels the light and begins to sing when the world is still dark. I don't think that was original to her, but I love it so much. Faith is a bird that feels the light and begins to sing even when the world is still dark. And I think that's just such a beautiful illustration of the place of singing and the life of faith and what it looks like to live the Christian life is that we live in the middle part of our story, this part where Jesus says you're going to have struggle, you're going to have suffering, you're going to have hardship, but take heart because I have overcome it all. And so God is overcoming it all in this messy middle, and God will overcome it all. But right now we live in the messy middle. We live in the place of struggle and heartache and suffering, where things get pretty dark sometimes. But we are the people that in faith, we feel the light and we begin to sing and we sing light into the darkness. It's always been a part of who it is, and it's a part of, and if you are a Christian, it is a part of who you are, whether you've grabbed a hold of that or not. It's a part of your faith family, and it has been for thousands of years. There's the song of whatever in multiple places in the Bible, the song of Moses, the song of Deborah, the song of so and so. But this really picks up Psalms. It's a whole book of songs. This really picks up in the New Testament where you have Mary. She finds out that she's going to be the mother of the Messiah. And one of the first things she does after the messenger, the angel leaves her, is that she begins to sing. And it's not that she's in a really high place. There's good stuff in that. But also she's heading into a really bad spot. She quite possibly is looking at people, her family members killing her. But she is praising God in the midst of all of this. Looking with the eyes of faith, she is feeling the light and beginning to sing even when the world is dark. We see it in Zechariah. We see it in this old man Simeon rejoicing when they know that Jesus is coming into the world. They're in the midst of the darkness. They don't see the light yet. Simeon gets to hold the little bit of light, but doesn't see the world changing yet, but feels it and begins to sing even when the world is dark. Jesus sang. Did you know that? Jesus sang. On the night, his last night with his disciples, having his last meal with them, the night that he was going to be betrayed and tortured, killed, ridiculed, suffer, all of this stuff, the night of his deepest darkness, he sang with his disciples. He sang. Believing that there was light, and that it was worth singing about, even as he was heading into this thing that he knew was going to be deep suffering. And that has been true of Christians over and over again. It was true of Paul and Silas. We've told this story a lot, but Paul and Silas, early followers of Jesus, they weren't doing anything wrong, but Christians have always been a disruptive force in the world. There are people invested in systems of oppression. So in as Christianity confronts those things, that it causes conflict. In the town of Philippi, in the city of Philippi, there was a lot of people that were very invested in people worshiping other gods, worshiping idols and things like that. There was a big business. And Paul and Silas, by them telling Jesus and people beginning to give their life to God, they begin walking away from these idols, these things that aren't gods. And so people stop buying these little figurines. They stop going to all the tourist attractions of idolatry, you know, to go see this big statue and this big statue. And it was threatening people's pocketbooks. And it caused a riot. It got people stir up a riot. Paul and Silas, they got beaten and thrown in jail. And there they are sitting in this dungeon with chains on their legs and chains on their arms. And somewhere in the middle of the night, they begin to feel the light. And they begin to sing. And all is darkness. They've got beaten, hurting bodies. They are in jail, in a dungeon. And they begin to sing. And other people in jail hear it. The jailers hear it. And then there's an earthquake, and it shakes, and the prison bars fall off of their hinges, and the chains come off of the walls. And the jailer thinks, "Oh no, they've escaped. These people that I was entrusted with, I don't want to suffer and get killed and executed. I don't want what is going to. I know what will happen to me if these people get away to happen." So he begins to kill, to take his own life. And Paul and Silas in the darkness say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! We're here. We're not going anywhere. We were just in the middle of our song." And so they begin telling him about Jesus, and he becomes a follower of Jesus that day. He takes him home to his house. His whole family becomes followers of Jesus. They go back to the jail, and they They work things out with the mayor and the ruling people there. This story has been repeated over and over again throughout Christian history. God's people, particularly in the dark places, some light gets through to them and we begin to sing. God stirs up something in our heart. A song of faith and hope, and that this conviction that this isn't all that there is begins to well up inside of us and says, this isn't how my story ends. This isn't how the story ends. That I believe that God is on his throne and that God is faithful and that the world and all of this is going to end in a good new beginning. It's been true over and over and over again. I think one of the most, there's a lot of things I'd love to share with you about Nazi singing in Nazi camps or in the gulags of communist Russia. I think one of the most noted songs, Amazing Grace, the story behind that is really quite beautiful. One thing that you have to understand John Newton, that wrote this song, is the world back then was very different than what it is now, and it's different than what many of us maybe think that it was. Sometimes when I talk to people, I get the impression that they think that at some point, you know, maybe in the 1800s, that there was this group of that white people invented slavery and they enslaved Africans, and then finally the shackles were thrown off. In the Civil War, but that's not how things happen. When you miss that, you miss this incredible gratitude that we all need to have for where we live in the world today. See, the truth is, up until fairly recently in human history, people were enslaved by everybody. You enslaved your own people, you enslaved everybody else's people. Slavery and domination and oppression were just so incredibly normal. And it was like, and the idea of somebody saying we should bring an end to slavery is like saying, hey, we should stop running water coming to our houses. Everyone should give up driving. We should all just stop breathing or something. It was that, no one thought of that. Because everybody thought this is just a normal part of the systems of the world. British people enslaved Irish people, and Irish people enslaved Scottish people, and just on and on and on, all over the world. Anybody that was different, and sometimes people from your own family, you know, it just happened. So John Newton, as a young man, he's walking through Britain. He gets captured by some British sailors, thrown on a ship and impressed to being a sailor. It's another form of slavery, being taken and forced to go and be a slave. He hated it. Eventually, he tried to escape. They whipped him brutally, and he was both homicidal and suicidal. He wanted to kill his captain and then throw himself overboard. But eventually, he just calmed down and he decided not to do that. But they also sold him into slavery in Africa whenever they got there. And so this white man, slave to African slave traders, he experienced all of that. And then he escaped from there, gets back to Britain, continues his work as being a sailor. And part of him being a sailor is that he becomes a slave trader. Because again, no one back then would have said, "Hey, that really stinks. I experienced that. I don't want to continue." Like, they just assume that's just part of the world, and then no one's going to get rid of it. But there's a storm that comes into his life, and in the midst of that storm, the light of God reaches out to him, and he opens himself up to God. And offers his life to God. Whatever is left, if it's moments or minutes or days or whatever, take what I've got. And John gives his life to God that day. And he's not a completely changed man at that moment. He goes back to England. He begins to figure out what it means in his life to be a Christian. And years later, he comes to this conclusion that this, the, this real light of God just bursts into his life. And he has this idea of abolition, that maybe as an institution, as a thing, we should get rid of slavery. Maybe it is outside of the will of God that other humans should own and oppress other humans. And he begins working with groups of other people that have the same ideas. And just months before he died, slavery became outlawed in the British kingdom. But he wrote Amazing Grace to tell the story of how God redeemed him. This cursing, hateful, spiteful, mean man that God saved his life and changed his heart around, and also was saving his people, saving the world really from this thing that it's okay to own other people. And he put that down into a song. And still today, all over the world, people sing this song, Amazing Grace, at some of their lowest of lows. Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. And then he goes, that's about his individual stuff. And then he goes on, talking about how God has rescued him and promised good to him. And about his hope in the life to come. On the other side of the Atlantic, Christian people who were African slaves, our brothers and sisters, lovers of Christ, they developed their own songs when there was no hope in their life, there was no getting out, there was no escape, there was no, they saw no life, no hope in this world of their situation changing. They developed these spirituals that like Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, and Go Down, Moses. Anybody know Swing Low, Sweet Chariot? Swing low, sweet chariot, come and pour to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, come and pour to carry me home. And it gave them hope and faith and kept them going and their soul and their spirit alive in the midst of incredible persecution, incredible oppression. I love the last part. I won't sing it because I can't. If you get there before I do, coming forward to carry me home. Tell all my friends that I'm coming there too. Coming forward to carry me home. That even when we can't have faith that things are going to get better for ourselves in this life, we know that this life is not all that there is. And they built that faith up in themselves through singing praises of faith and hope and love to the God that they knew created them and loved them despite what they saw in their circumstances. One of my favorites, I'll hurry up on this one, 1914, World War I. There's reasons why there's movies and books and things like that about World War II, and there's very few of those things comparatively about World War I. It was just such a horrendous war. Not that the other ones weren't, but it was just such a horrendous, horrendous war. No one wants to see fields of people getting gassed. No one wants to see those kinds of movies. Trench warfare. No one wants to spend an hour and a half watching that, much less years of your life actually living it. But on Christmas Day, 1914, just 100 feet sometimes away from each other, the German and the British lines, people had been killing each other and like leaving dead bodies out in the middle of no man's land, sometimes for weeks, because the lines didn't move and they couldn't get to the other person. Something happened that day, and we don't know. There's different stories about how it happened in different places, but there was a truce that broke out, a break in the killing and a break in the madness. One person said that somebody on the British line started singing on Christmas Day, "O come all ye faithful." And the the people in the German lines recognized that song and they began singing, "O Come All Ye Faithful." And then eventually as they began singing and singing, people began walking out into and singing together and exchanging cigarettes and cookies and whatever stuff that they had and picking up the dead bodies of their comrades and their fellow soldiers and burying them. Singing together, drinking together. It was this moment of peace. Scared the hell out of all the leaders because, man, if you get your soldiers treating each other like human beings across the world, how are you going to get each other to slaughter each other? Man, scares the hooey out of the political class that's trying to get people to kill each other. But on that day, singing songs to God broke light into this incredibly dark place. And people lifted up their souls to the author of their hope and their faith, the one that they knew would win the day. We are a singing people. We sing at the mountaintops and we sing in the valleys of life. And it shapes us and it changes who we are. And I hope this can be a part of the rhythm of your life. Science is now catching up to us and saying that, hey, this singing stuff, it's really good for you. This singing together stuff, it's really good for you. Somehow it suppresses anxiety, it lowers stress, and at the same time it elevates the human spirit. And we just see it happening in the brain. And somehow it also brings people closer together. So what a great formula. It suppresses anxiety and stress and all these things, elevates the human spirit and brings people together. Wow. What a really great thing. Maybe we should have institutions and groups of people that get together on a regular basis and sing hopeful, uplifting, full of faith things together and just carry that on for hundreds or thousands of years, and maybe that will change people. Maybe slowly, maybe two steps forward, one step back, but it'll change people and change the world. Way to go, science. Yeah, yeah. What a great idea. Something that we've done for a long time and that can change our life. May this be a part of our life. And getting ready for this, I've asked a few people to share a song that was meaningful to them. Several of the people were really excited about that and couldn't be here today. But I have a song that I wanted to share with you. And man, I'm not a good singer, but I'm going to share it anyway. So get your little insert out to "This Is My Father's World." So sometimes when I look out at the world, I think, man, it looks to me like all the dark things are winning. It looks like that long arm of history, what is the saying? That the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. Sometimes it looks too long, or that it's not really bending or bending enough towards justice. It looks like it's kind of made a U-turn and heading downwards. You know, the gas is out of the plane. I don't know. And sometimes just reading history does that too, not just current events. And this is a song that has become very memorable or like meaningful to me that I remember and I sing during this time. And I never remember words well, so I always have to pull this out. It goes like this. This is my Father's world. Sing it with me if you can. And to my listening ears, all nature sings and round me rings the music of the spheres. This is my Father's world. I rest me in the thought of rocks and trees and skies and seas. His hand the wonders wrought. This is my Father's world. The birds their carols raise. The morning light, the lily white, declare their Maker's praise. This is my Father's world. He shines in all that's fair. In the rustling grass I hear him pass. He speaks to me everywhere. This is my Father's world. Oh, let me never forget that through the wrong seems oft so strong, God is the ruler yet. This is my Father's world. Why should my heart be sad? The Lord is King, let the heavens ring. God reigns, let the earth be glad. Man, so that song, when I am feeling like all is lost and things are dark and stuff isn't working out and history is bending towards bad stuff and not the other way around, this lifts, reminds me of what is actually good and true and worth believing in.